Okay, time to start. Welcome again. Just don't remember how to start the recording here, but there it was. Okay. There's a lot of new technologies here. There was a lot of questions on some delivery, time for delivery of a first essay. It should be clear now, hopefully, on the Blackboard pages. There are a lot of new stuff there for us as well, so some other tasks were scheduled at the wrong time. The official date and time for delivery is the 23rd, so it's still a couple of weeks till it should be delivered. I may get to part of presenting the task now, but anyway, I'll probably present the two papers that you're going to analyze next week, and not now. So what we finished off with last lecture was to talk about actually being specific and being enough specific when it comes to asking a question that you want to investigate further. And in connection with that, I think I mentioned the name variables, which may be straightforward, but which is surprisingly difficult for a lot of you. And also for trained people. And the variables we're talking about, this is also one of the tasks for your first essay, is to actually identify variables. Because we tend to say that variables comes basically in two groups. They are either independent or dependent in your research. And when you do statistical analysis, it's usually then you usually try to investigate this dependency between variables. An independent variable is, well, it can be different things, but usually it is part of a situation that exists in beforehand. Take a basic thing, gender. You're either a boy or a girl. Does that affect something, the dependent variable? Which then could be intelligence, skills, how fast you solve a task. Okay, a very simplified thing. The independent variables comes in different versions. It may be categorical in an experiment. An independent variable tends to be what you induce in the situation. For instance, you compare one program, one algorithm to an existing one, then the your new one and the existing one becomes the independent variable, and then the performance becomes the dependent variable. So when we do statistical analysis, it's this relationship that we investigate. Is there a relationship between states of the independent variable and the dependent variable? We can try to do some identification of variables in the task I gave you. An attitude campaign reduces speeding on highways. Anyone wants to try it first with the variables? What's the independent? What could be the independent variable here? Any suggestions? Yeah, it could be. I think that has more to do, probably it has more to do with operationalization of the variable than it has to do with whether it is an independent or a dependent. Yeah, those things you talk about are probably independent variables, they are. But given a situation like this, where you investigate whether the campaign works, it's usually states of the independent variable you're after. And that could be, I'll give it to you, yes or no. Before and after you have introduced the attitude campaign. That would typically be the independent variable here. And what would be the dependent variable then? You can go through that. No, I would say the driver is the could be an independent or a confounding independent variable here. Yeah. Yeah, instances of speeding or speeding in general, maybe. At least it's the result. Do you reduce the number of speeders or something like that when you introduce an attitude campaign? Then the number of speeders or the actual speed or whatever, we can get back to that. That has to do with operationalization. Would then be the dependent variable. We ask the question, does that depend on whether you have introduced the campaign or not? So you see, that's the relationship between the two variables. Independent and dependent. Meditation makes us better humans. Just gives it it's probably quite difficult to actually isolate independent and dependent variables here before you have operationalized the terms. So maybe we'll go one step back and say that let's try first to operationalize the first one here. An attitude campaign reduces speeding on highways. What variables do we need to operationalize here? Any suggestions? Attitude campaign is one word then. So the attitude campaign needs to be defined, of course. That's pretty basic. We need to say, what did we do? Well, we put up posters on every kilometers along the road or something like that. Or we introduced ads in the local newspaper every Saturday morning or whatever. That's an operationalization of what we mean by attitude campaign. So obviously that needs to be done here. So we need to be specific on that. But the second one may be a bit difficult here. How do we operationalize the dependent variable? There was one proposal here earlier. You can repeat that one, maybe. Yeah? Instances of speeding, yeah? Number of accidents is a possibility. You can probably use both of them. But what you then need to say in a case like this is that we wanted to introduce whether putting signs up along the street between here and Lillehammer, because that's another one we didn't mention here. What we mean by highway, maybe. Putting up posters along this road led to a lower number of speeding drivers or something like that. But maybe it needs to be specified further. So when you try, when you start analyzing this, you see that, well, maybe number of speeders, yeah, but maybe it does only affect the number of speeders during daytime, not during nighttime. So maybe that needs to be specified as well. We'll get back to that when we are trying to, when we will complicate the term variables a bit more later in this lecture. So in order to actually be able to do research on a question like this, and this is directly transferable, of course, to a lot of situations you will have. Does changes in an organization make the organization safer? Well, what changes, what organization, under which circumstances? All these things needs to be defined in order to be able to analyze this in a good way. Meditation makes us into better humans. Is that easy to operationalize? Did you try? Okay. Give me some terms that needs to be operationalized. Anyone? Yeah? Better humans? How do you measure better humans? Ah, obvious. How can it be done? Because that's not a part of it. You have to identify what it is, but you also have to have a suggestion for what we mean by it. What do we mean? Better humans as measured by something. And then you need to have an idea about as measured by, what that means. Did you think about that? Yeah. General behaviors towards people around you, the amount you spend on charity work, the time you spend on charity work, that's probably measurable. Yeah. Or it could be using a tool that is widely recognized as a tool for measuring kindness. Maybe there are some, I don't know, some psychological questionnaire that tries to get into that. So, are we defining the independent or the dependent variable now? Better humans, is that a dependent or an independent variable? It's a dependent variable, yes. It is a dependent variable. Yeah, that could be a very, how much time they do involuntarily work, how much time they spend there, could be a measure of or whether meditation actually works. So then we have just one of the variables in this case. But of course it's more complicated. Well, you may have been a lot more creative. I don't know, maybe there are a number of creative choices here to define how to measure better humans. It's a very vague term, and your choice needs to be expressed quite precisely in this case, so that others actually can replicate it and understand what you have meant by it. When you then find that you have an effect on this, well, others can then question later whether that was a good operationalization, whether that is actually a good way to measure things. So maybe not, or maybe it is, but at least you make it visible for others so that they can discuss it and approach this in their own way. Get it? But let's go to the other variable then. We have now defined the dependent variable, but that has to be dependent on something. And the something, what could that be here? It's a short sentence, so it's obvious. Huh? Meditation, yeah? How can we operationalize meditation? What kind of meditation we use? I don't know the different types of meditation, but that's the obvious choice. You have to decide what type of meditation we are talking about. Usually, when you try to operationalize something like this, you also go one step back and try to say something about what do you compare things with. So, one example of such an operationalization in this case could be that you want to see whether transcendental meditation or whatever it's called is better than viewing a fish tank when it comes to predicting the amount of charity work you do. Okay, then we have rephrased this completely, right? So we have rephrased this very vague formulation, meditation makes us into better humans, into something that's actually measurable. We have said that we want to compare one type of meditation with watching a fish tank, which is the something that's quite, I don't know if it's similar, but at least it could require the same amount, or it has an element of relaxation and it has the same time frame connected to it, so you're not comparing a stressful situation to meditation. Then you can isolate a variable and compare that variable to something and see whether it actually predicts what you have defined as a good measure of being a better human. In cases like this, you would typically add a number of other stuff to this. You would add a lot of typically other measurements as well. So you don't measure only one thing. You measure probably. You try to address the dependencies and the dependent variable in many ways. So, time spent on charity, how you respond to a certain questionnaire, how much you smile to your colleagues or something like that during a day, could be these measurements. But at least when we have done a task like this, when we have broken things down like this and have been specific on them, it's a lot easier for us to actually be able to measure this dependency between the independent and the dependent variable. The next step in this chain is to state actually the relationship between the independent and the dependent variable. So we want to guess what are our best guess of an outcome of the relationship between the independent and the dependent variable. And that should be stated as something that's could either be rejected or confirmed. So, an hypothesis, if we take this meditation example, is that being exposed or using the technique of transcendental meditation will make people spend significantly more time on charity work compared to people that only have been watching a fish tank, or something. So then you say something about the relationship between the independent and the dependent variable, and that is something that we actually can gather data on and either then throw away the hypothesis or keep it. We tend to say that we have two types of hypotheses in a setting like this, where we have where we do an hypothesis testing. We either have the scientific hypothesis or the null hypothesis. So we have a scientific hypothesis that says that there is a relationship between the independent and the dependent variable. And that is then compared to the alternative, the null hypothesis, that says that there is no relationship between the independent and the dependent variable. So when we approach this in a statistical manner, when we do hypothesis testing, well, we check whether we should reject or keep the null hypothesis in a situation. And we tend to be quite conservative here. So there should be an overwhelming probability that the research or the scientific hypothesis, H1, is true compared to the null hypothesis. So we reject the null hypothesis only if there is less than 5 or 1 or 0.1 or whatever percent chance of that one being actually true. So we'll get back to this a number of times. And you do a practical thing on this as well, because when you are going to gather some kind of quantitative data later in a scientific project, well, what I want you to do is that I want you to do actually hypothesis testing in a statistical package. I'll do it with you, but you will also play with this yourself. So, a little bit back again. Why do we do this? Well, we do it to establish whether we actually have a causal relationship between a dependent and an independent variable, or usually the other way around. Thus, changes in the independent variable actually lead to changes in the state of the dependent variable. So we try to establish control. In a very simplified way, we have a situation like this, where you have a first test and a second test, and in between these two you do some kind of a manipulation. But in our speeding experiment, you had a situation where you hadn't introduced the attitude campaign, and then you measure something afterwards again where the attitude campaign has been launched, and then you check whether this relationship is there. Did the manipulation we introduced in the situation actually cause some kind of a change in the dependent variable? There's a number of things that can happen, that can go wrong here when we do these types of conclusions. And we'll get back to some of them. But I can say in general, in this clean, let's call it that, clean experimental setting where we do a manipulation, a very good way to control for confounding or difficulties and to control for the actual relationship between an independent and a dependent variable is to introduce a control group. Someone who doesn't get manipulated at all. So that's usually the a situation where you have, instead of doing the manipulation between test 1 and test 2, you just let them go through without manipulation. That usually, well, in a lot of settings, that can't be done. So then we would probably have to do other things to actually control that we have a relationship between an independent and a dependent variable. If I remember right now, I'll probably jump a bit forward and back here. One important thing to remember is that even though you get a relationship, it doesn't always mean that it is correct, true. Because a lot of things may affect things like this. And one very important thing to remember is that even though if something covariate, in this case measured by correlation, so you're familiar with the term correlation, something is either in a linear way linked to a cause variable or not, and it can be in a positive and a negative way. You find a lot of correlations out in the world. A very commonly cited one is also a very strong one. If you take this over time, there is an extremely strong relationship between ice cream sales and shark attacks. So, does ice cream, or are sharks very fond of swimmers that have eaten ice cream, do you think? Because it's summer, people are actually swimming and are available for the sharks to eat or something like that. So that's a pretty obvious one. That's very simple. I don't know if I can explain the next one to you. Shirt length and stock prices are highly correlated. So when stock prices raises, the shirt length gets shorter. This is a correlation that is measured. Does this mean that there is a cause-effect relationship at all? It's probably something similar to the first one. There's probably some seasonal variation, which is quite systematic when it comes to stock price developments, and there is probably something else that has caused this. So I have included a slide here with a link here to a site with a lot of these. We tend to call these things spurious correlations. So you could call them curious, strange correlations. It's usually correlations that actually don't... There is a correlation, but there is no cause-effect relationship, even though the correlation is there. It's something else that has happened. So there is probably some other factors that's governing this whole situation. And... if I can bring this up, I'm not sure if I have it here. Yeah, it could look like this. So you can find a number of these extremely strange types of correlations. So U.S. spending on science-based technology is highly correlated by people taking their own life by suffocation or something like that. take a look at this. You can find also very, very strange relationships that isn't even linear, where things relate over time in a strange way. So Nicolas Cage make people drown or something like that. It probably doesn't, but it's there. So you can find an enormous number of these things. This seems like a curiosity. And maybe it is, but a lot of the conclusions that we see referred to in newspapers when simple questionnaires, enquetes have been raised are of a very curious nature, where you actually can't be sure that the relationship that has been reported on a cause-effect relationship actually is true, and not only a curiosity. We refer to two types of causes for things like this to occur, and one of these things is usually what we refer to as the direction problem. Is actually A the cause of B, or maybe things are a bit more complicated than this when we try to investigate it further. The sighting here is from Holbergs Jeppe på Bjerge, where Jeppe's life either is miserable because he drinks a lot, or maybe Jeppe drinks a lot because his life is so miserable. So what's... I guess Jeppe's approach to this is that it's the second solution, while his surroundings probably refer to the first one. The point here is this is not very straightforward, and in a lot of situations... this can be rather complicated. I won't go into this second debate here now. But it's one that you may have been hearing quite a few times. It was a common debate when TV came around. It was a common debate when people could borrow video films and watch them at home. When satellite TV came with a number of TV programs formulated or focused at kids, and in the morning, so kids could watch alone, this problem came up. When, of course, when game consoles came, and when computers came and became a commonly used thing, this was again raised as a topic. Is there a relationship between becoming violent and the amount of time you spent on these devices? So does playing video games with violent content actually make you more violent? For all I know, this was a debate when the book came around or something like that. So it's a reoccurring debate. It comes around now and then. And some early findings indicated quite a strong relationship here between, or not very strong, but at least an obvious relationship. Correlational studies of American kids showed again and again a relationship between the amount of time the kids spent watching television, and this was the start of it in the 60s, the amount of time spent watching television and aggressive expressions measured in different ways. It could be the responses to questionnaires, but it was also studies that where peers or people in the class reported their friends and measured their friend on their aggressiveness or something like that. And there was a pretty consistent connection there, measured. So is it such a relationship? I can't say there isn't, but there is some, at least when you try to clip this down further and try to investigate this. It's also possible to... Well, let's not take the scientific approach to getting the answers correctly, but there is another possibility, at least, that exists here, even without doing anything with the correlational or with the study that has been performed. Because an obvious direct explanation here is that it's the kids that in beforehand was most aggressive that plays video games more, or who watches television more. So then we will switch the relationship between the dependent and the variant and the dependent variable. It is, instead of saying that video violence increases violence levels in kids, you say that violent kids watch more television. So you switch this completely around. How could this, any suggestion to how this could have been solved? How can one try to investigate such a topic? Maybe difficult. It is difficult. A lot of scientists have spent their career on stuff like this. Well, at least one approach that has been done on this is to try to categorize or try to analyze a bit further who these kids are. What are their personalities? What are their socioeconomic status? That may be a factor. So they have investigated a number of subgroups of children and tried to operationalize and to nuance the term kids in this statement. For instance, by doing personality measures on the kids. How they like to handle information, how they behave in different situations. And when we do that, some more clearness to a topic like this comes up. For instance, we see that it seems to be that kids that has a vulnerability towards actually being affected by content like this are those who may be affected by video violence. So there's a subgroup of kids where video violence actually leads to more violence because they're vulnerable to it. So they have a higher sensibility or something like that, or a lower guard for this type of expressions. While most kids can kill as many Germans the wish or something like that in a video game without actually being affected at all when it comes to behaviors in other situations. When we analyze things in a way like this and when we approach it in a more nuanced way, we get also a more correct picture of this situation. So this could probably be addressed in many other ways as well. But at least this is one example of a way to address such a problem. Okay, I think this is a good time for a break. So start again 15 minutes past 11.